Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. I'm Ron Edwards. This is the Ron and Don program coming to you from the cold northern plains of the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Well, we lived a good life. Yesterday, if you will, about this time, we were all talking in terms of what had happened on the previous day, Monday, when the temperature reached 57. Hey, this is Minnesota. We've got a lot for you tonight, so we're going to get right into it. Don Allen, as I said, is not with us this evening. Hopefully he'll be back next week. But we are doing a special assignment, special program tonight, taking a look at some items that are emerging as we speak. First and foremost, rumors and speculation that the junior senator from Minnesota, Al Franken, may announce his resignation from the United States Senate. We cannot get any significant clarification, if you will. And in fact, it would be our take that he probably will not resign. And apparently his supporters and the polls basically show that the majority of Minnesotans would prefer for the senator to continue to serve. We're going to be like Alabama, where you have a man running for the United States Senate there that has done much terrible things, if you will, much egregious things than Al Franken, named Roy Moore, old Judge Roy Moore down there. If he can have the support of the President of the United States and more than a majority of the sitting Republican senators in the United States Congress, then, you know, Al Franken, who holds his seat and will hold it until, 2020, you know, should just make a fight of it. The latest allegations against him, he maintains that they are, quote-unquote, inconsistent with facts and material truth, and that's always important, if you will. So we here in Minnesota will keep our eye on the office of Senator Franken. We assume press conference probably would be maybe, or announcement would maybe be 9 o'clock Central Standard Time, 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. That would seem to be the normal rule of thumb to then, you know, be able to capture all of the necessary media and et cetera. So we will await that. As we said, though, earlier, we think that the senator from Minnesota must weigh the comfort level of the president of the United States, if you will, Donald Trump, in supporting, quote-unquote, a pedophile or a child molester and everything else. Though Roy Moore says he didn't do any of it. Al Franken, stepped forward and said that he did do some things. In fact, a couple of things were captured on film. We would, raise questions about that also. Next week, Mr. Allen has returned. We will open the phone lines, and for those in our international, domestic, and local audiences, you feel free to call and, you know, chit-chat with us, debate with us, if you will, about how this situation has gone. By the way, the rules of engagement here in the state of Minnesota, if Al Franken resigns tomorrow morning, the governor of the state of Minnesota, who is of the same party, so it's kind of the reverse of what it is in Alabama, where the governor is a female who apparently had no problem with the conduct of Roy Moore as a grown man, 32 years of age, profanicating, if you will, with a child, if you will. And so the governor, if she can, accept what Roy Moore was alleged to have done, and all Roy had to say was, I didn't do it kind of thing, then certainly there needs to be a little bit better balance for Senator Al Franken, who certainly stepped up and said a couple things that I did do. I'm not happy about it, or I'm not proud of it, if you will, but I think that I could continue to serve the constituency of my state, the state of Minnesota. And so, you know, the voters, as they say in Alabama, if you will, A&M, think about it, Alabama, Minnesota, A&M, kind of like radio. If the voters of Alabama are being given the latitude to make the determination about Roy Moore, then certainly the voters of Minnesota should be the ones to determine. But let's say that there is a resignation. The governor of the state of Minnesota, Mark Dayton, a former senator himself, by the way, who served a term of 6 years in the United States Senate in the early part of the 2000s, if you will, would appoint a immediate successor to the seat. It would be a short-term appointment. The individual would probably have to run in a special election in November of 2018, if you will. And then because the rotation would be a little bit out of whack, may have to run again in 2020, if you will. In fact, experts here talking about in 2020, if there would be a continued contest for Al Franken's seat, that there would be two United States senators and a governor running for those three constitutional offices. Hasn't happened here since, 1979, according to the experts. So we watch closely here in the land of 10,000 lakes and, quote-unquote, the citadel of liberalism and et cetera. And we will see what is happening. The other piece that is being talked about around the world, if you will, is the decision by President Donald Trump for his recognition, if you will, of Jerusalem as the capital of the Israeli state, becoming the first American president to do that, if you will, understanding that Israel was declared a sovereign state in 1948. Actually, the two-state solution, which everybody talks about, was supposedly addressed at that time because the United Nations resolution in late 1947 and then again in early 1948, if I'm not mistaken, the resolution passed in April of 1948 indicated there would be a two-state solution, but what happened, the United States, Great Britain, and France played a very interesting game, encouraged the governments of Transjordan, as it was called then, now just called Jordan, Syria, which had just become a sovereign nation. It had been a French protectorate for 80 years. Egypt, if you will, were convinced, Iraq also participated in that attack at that time, to attack the Israeli government. And, of course, the Arab nations were not well coordinated. In fact, they really weren't well armed. They didn't realize how well armed the Israelis had been made in preparation for what was pulled off. And so as an outgrowth of the conflict, the first conflict in 1948 between Israel, the new nation of Israel, if you will, and those Arab/Muslim nations that we just named, the United States, France, and Great Britain indicated that the Arabs, quote-unquote, had violated good faith, if you will, and that there would be no effort on the part of the supreme powers. And you have to understand that the United States, Great Britain, and to some degree France, had just concluded a four-year war. In fact, for the French and the British, it was, you know, 6 years. And that they, having the military force and the military might, would agree that the Arab nations had forfeited their right to be in support, and that the Palestinians had forfeited the right to enjoy the privileges that had been awarded to what was supposed to be the new state of Israel and the new state of Palestine, if you will. And so since 1948, the Palestinian people have been born, come, gone, died, and et cetera, and there has still no Palestinian state, if you will. There are, what, 6 or 7 million Palestinians piled up in a little piece of land called Gaza. The only thing that is probably keeping them from not being starved to death is that Gaza borders the Mediterranean in the south, and there is a common border with Egypt, if you will, and the Sinai. So for those of you that have your computers, just call up your maps, you'll see it there. But tonight we want to take the time to take a look at some of the factors that are behind the fact that, fortunately, the two-state solution, and the estimation of this historian, the two-state solution will never happen, if you will. But what has happened this time around with this current president, Donald Trump, a man who thinks only in terms of his imperial position, authority, and grandeur, if you will, that there will not be a situation in which there will be anything resembling negotiations and et cetera. In fact, the Palestinians, in the last 5 hours of the announcement by President Trump that he is recognizing the city of Jerusalem as the now capital of the sovereign state of Israel, and that the Palestinians can come to the negotiation table, and he will send his son-in-law. This was a tough day for the Trump family to some regards, because Donald Jr. on the Hill and met with the House Intelligence Committee. Some of you may not even be aware of this. This story was breaking as we were getting ready to go on the air here, and we were checking our communications network and et cetera. Donald Trump's son, Adam Schiff, by the way, Democrat of California and ranking minority member of the House Intelligence Committee, came out and told Donald Trump Jr. And we will move back into the whole situation of Palestine, Jerusalem, and et cetera. Donald Trump Jr. refused to answer some specific questions as it pertains to conversations between he and his father, the President of the United States of America, and what Donald Trump Jr. cited as the legal conditions for him not answering a congressional committee dealing with the possibility of treason having taken place. I'm not talking about collusion and et cetera. I'm talking about that the way things are beginning to emerge and fall out. And I do think he will be fired in a very short period of time. Robert Mueller has gone far beyond the pale and has crossed, quote-unquote, the red line, if you will. We are, by 2018, which is just days away, really, we are headed for a constitutional crisis, and it will be very interesting. But Donald Trump Jr. said that he refused. I don't know if he said he respectfully refused or if he just gave the House committee and the Democrats the finger, if you will, but he said that he was invoking. Now, this is crazy. This is mostly an intelligent young white man, if you will. His daddy is president of the United States. Donald Jr. is supposed to be a big-time operator and developer, a well-educated young white man, and et cetera. He said that he was invoking confidentiality, if you will, because there was a lawyer sitting in the room when he and his father was talking, and so based on that lawyer's presence, I would have to assume there was probably a couple more lawyers in there, that he, Donald Trump Jr., is invoking some specific conditions and et cetera with regards to what it is that he should in fact be testifying. Now, this is father and son talking with some strangers in the room who carry degrees, saying that they are legal practitioners, in other words, lawyers. But Donald Trump said, no, we can't talk about what me and Daddy talked about as it pertains to working with Vladimir Putin, the leader of Russia, if you will, and others, and expectations and et cetera. Now, this comes at the same time that earlier today, a whistleblower, who apparently has already turned over the text messages to the FBI, indicated that on Inauguration Day, General Michael Flynn, who has already pleaded guilty, quote-unquote, to a felony, though the conservative right in the country arguing that it is not a criminal felony. Felonies are felonies. In fact, you need to go read, quote-unquote, the Black's Book of Law and Interpretation and et cetera. but anyway, Michael Flynn, General Michael Flynn, on the same day that Donald Trump was being sworn in, put his hand on that Bible, and Chief Justice Robinson had told him to take the oath of office and et cetera, that General Michael Flynn was texting to a buddy that, number one, the deal that was being cut with the Russians to build nuclear reactors in the Middle East was going through, and that the Russian sanctions imposed by UPS, that Black president, Barack Obama, was going to be shredded and torn up, and they were going to make big money. Now, these are some of the things that are breaking today here in the United States of America, a nation based on Roy Moore, if you will, based on Donald Trump, based on Junior, if you will, based on Kirchner, if you will, based on Manifold, if you will, based on Page, if you will. I mean, you know, a whole cast of characters right out of the Rogues Gallery. This is clearly, I mean, come on, folks. We are clearly a nation in moral and political decline, if you will. Now, I'll tell you, one of the things that Donald's going to have to make his mind up on is what he's going to do with Little Rocket Man. You know, that was all funny. Race-based, by the way, race-based, you know, because the only people that he talks about, that Donald Trump really talks about, blast and et cetera, of course, is persons of color, primarily African-Americans and et cetera, though he sometimes gets ticked off at the Red Brothers and et cetera. So we are a nation tonight that it's like watching a fireworks, if you will, you know, except it's not the 4th of July, if you will. And your eyes are bugging out of your head. If you were a cartoonist making a picture of the American right, if you will, Donald Trump's base, as they're calling it, looking at the fireworks going off and seeing the American stars and stripes being torn to shreds by all of the, and we'll just start with the weakest of them and go right up the ladder, with all of the collusion, with all of the lying, with all the misrepresentation, with all of the craziness, with all of the shredding of the moral fiber of the United States of America, the support for Roy Moore, if you will, and many others. And then the final step going up that ladder to the Constitution of the United States of America and the Bill of Rights, treason. You know, I'm seeing a certain era of fear in the eyes of many Americans, if you will, of the Caucasian persuasion. And folks are scared because there's a lot of folks that know that they very well be engaged in a military conflict that's going now to the North Korean situation, and which, you know, now they keep talking about, well, maybe a couple thousand or such. Man, you're talking in terms of those nuclear rockets start flying back and forth. If those artillery shells and strategic and tactical nuclear devices are used in South Korea and are sent across the Sea of Japan to hit Japan and et cetera, because you have to understand tonight, my friends, that both the Chinese, who have a nuclear arsenal, and the Russians, who have a nuclear arsenal, that between both of them, they could blow up maybe the whole galaxy. Notice I didn't say the planet, just the whole galaxy. I mean, you're talking about people that have 12, 13, 14,000 nuclear warheads, if you will. Not even talking about the North Koreans. The Trump would like to, you know, massacre, if you will, eliminate, commit genocide, make disappear from the face of the earth a little yellow man called the North Koreans, if you will. But I just got a kind of a feeling that the Chinese ain't going to allow that to happen for their reasons. The Russians are not going to allow it to happen for their reasons, if you will. And what will happen is that the tipping point would have gone through the tent, and the big balloon, which is Donald Trump, would have exploded in gas, if you will. And we will cease to know and enjoy and be able to envision a future for our children and grandchildren and their children and grandchildren, because we turned this in to a nuclear zone, if you will, to a radiation zone. And millions and millions will perish. And I wonder how tough it is on those nights that he is lucid, that the President of the United States, the Big Trump, if you will, can be made to understand that this is not a game, if you will, that this is not some TV sitcom, and that it is the real world with real weapons and real death, if you will. I don't know that anyone can make him understand that, if you will, which then means that there will be considerations and other discussions that are going on. And maybe in the tradition and the legacy of the Bible and the scriptures and the scrolls and et cetera, and et cetera, and et cetera, that maybe with this quote-unquote announcement earlier today by Donald Trump that he has declared that the United States, I watched him sign his name on the book that has the quote-unquote decree, the declaration, and et cetera. And for those of you that really pay attention to things, I mean, he made his name at least five times larger than what is needed when you're signing something, if you will. And the manner in which he signed his name, and authorized, quote unquote, that he, the imperial president, was making this declaration, and that now, joining with his Jewish friends and associates, Shelton, Ellison, and others, that Donald Trump was basically saying, "I'm the man, man. I am the man. You know, I don't care what happens to nobody as long as it doesn't care to me," which makes you wonder about how tightly wrapped man is. But here's the problem for all of us, hundreds of millions, if you will. He is the president of the United States of America, a nation in decline, if you will. But he is still the president, and he is the man who sits on the second largest nuclear arsenal on the face of this planet, right behind the Russians and then right behind the Chinese. Now, by the way, also keep in mind that Israel, who was given nuclear capabilities about 30 years ago, always have envisioned that they will render, quote unquote, devastation down upon the little brown people of the Middle East. Here's the only problem is a true, quote unquote, Hebrew, Yiddish, if you will, Jew is of those people. He came from that part of the world. You know, I look at many of these European Jews, they came from Europe. It was a whole different segue, if you will, understanding the history. And so one of the things that we did tonight is that we went to the vast library to take a look at the pattern of what has happened and how all the players are doing their thing. And if we have enough smart people in Washington, D.C., in close proximity to the White House and to the State Department and to the Defense Department and to the Justice Department and to big white corporate America, to say, hey, we need to back up, rein in a little bit, and also take a look at what it is that we're getting ourselves into. So what we're going to do is to kind of give you a modern update. See, everyone can talk in terms of going back into the biblical times and going back to 2,000 and 3,000 years, though there wasn't any presence 3,000 years ago of Jews, if you will, in that part of the world, the so-called Middle East. But for many, the beginning of the purging of Jews, of Hebrews from Europe, people keep talking about Adolf Hitler and the conflict of 1932 to 1945, the concentration camps, and et cetera. When you hear people say that, you know that they clearly don't know their history, and that there had been many occasions, even there in quote unquote the Holy Land, where those who said that they were Semites, if you will, Jews, and et cetera, were forced out, if you will. In fact, you know, things became so bad at one point for the so-called Hebrew was that they committed mass suicide. You know, I hear people talk in terms of the suicide bombers that are in the Middle East and et cetera. They are the same people, you know. These folks who talk in terms of a right of access and a homeland and et cetera, they are the same people of David, Abraham, and all of the rest of, if you will, but you get so far away from your history that you don't begin to think about that. So I said, well, tonight we will, over the next 29 minutes, we will make it a little easier for those that are, quote-unquote, so intellectually proficient, if you will, because we know as an African-American, as a black man, as the son and daughters of the African, if you will, where, quote-unquote, many of the so-called great white intellectuals of yesteryear from Greece and Rome and et cetera went to the great black institutions in black Africa, Amarubi, if you will, Timbuktu, which people, white folks laugh about when they hear you say Timbuktu as if it is a joke and they're talking about something in Texas. It's just the arrogance, you see, and it is going to be arrogance that is going to be the death of us all. It is really sad what we see happening. As we said, we here in the United States are in a period of significant decline. It's difficult for people to face up to it. It's difficult for people to embrace the fact that that period of time has come and gone as other periods of time. Because, see, this planet of ours is just not 2,000 years old. And it became relevant when, quote-unquote, white scholars and those of the Catholic Church and et cetera set in monasteries and et cetera in the Italian and the Swiss Alps and chronicled, if you will, and edited the writings and the teachings of others who had come long before them in places and great continents like Asia, South America, Black Africa, if you will, the heartland of what we call, quote-unquote, North and South America and et cetera, the stories that are told to us as if there were no indigenous people here in what we now call the United States of America and the North American continent and the South American continent that we just spoke of seconds ago. And so we put this narrative together tonight, and it is supported by documentation, and what we have done is use all white authors. If you will, the individuals who chronicled, if you will, and brought forward their narratives and understandings of things that had happened are all Caucasian. They are from the caucuses, if you will. Yes, that's another myth that goes on. That range of mountains that is in what used to be called the southern part, quote unquote, of the Soviet Union and in Tsarist Russia and etc. But it was the conflict between Imperial Japan and Imperial Russia that began to send us on this spiraling course that is pushing us closer and closer to suicide as a planet, if you will, as warring factions and races. A number of individuals in the last 5 or 6 hours, Palestinians, if you will, believers of quote-unquote the teachings of the prophet and et cetera, are now saying that this could very well be the end of anything other than, quote-unquote, a religious holocaust, if you will. In 1901, 1902, China was looked upon as kind of a golden goose, if you will, with regards to how that nation had basically been raped, if you will, the use of opiates, if you will, the great Chinese dynasties and et cetera had come to an end maybe 150 to 200 years, though we still all can remember, the siege of Peking and et cetera, now known as Beijing and et cetera. But the hardest nut to crash, if you will, to the bottom of the seas, if you will, to destroy the little yellow man was Imperial Japan. And the Japanese had maintained a certain level of confidence. White Christians called it arrogance, if you will. For a number of centuries, 300 or 400 or 500 years, and it basically kept the quote-unquote devils from being able to have too much of a quote-unquote presence on the islands of Nepal, if you will. But anyways, the Russians had, Imperial Russia, had been indicating that they felt that there needed to be more white Christian expansion into the Far East, if you will, to help the little yellow man. And now, of course, folks had already saw that being done in both South America and Black Africa. The peoples of those continents going back to, in the case of South America, the early 1500s, in the case of Black Africa, the early pieces of the late 1600s, more properly the 1700s. And so the world, the non-white world of that particular period of time, let's say starting around 1690, knew, quote-unquote, the terror, the decadence that was brought to their shores by these Europeans, as they called themselves, these individuals from the Caucasus, if you will, who called themselves now Caucasians and et cetera. And so around 1903, 1904, Imperial Japan and Imperial Tsarist Russia clashed and began a titanic battle. And there was a Pacific port, if you will, which included a large naval installation, or a Russian Imperial Naval Installation called Port Arthur. And the Japanese, under the brilliant leadership of one of their great heroes, Admiral Togo, had begun to lay siege to our Port Arthur. And for those of you that want to run to your maps, it's there to the north of North Korea, if you will, and kind of up the coast, if you will, and across from Imperial Japan. So what happened was the Russians, who had begun to go into decline, starting with the almost defeat of the Imperial Russian armed forces by a little guy by the name of Napoleon about 100 years before, had made the mistake of underestimating the military capabilities and competency of the little yellow man called the Japanese, if you will. One of the things that the Japanese had done, understanding that they were an island nation surrounded by water, if you will, but wanting to explore, to trade, and et cetera, they had built militarily the third largest navy on the face of this planet. Yes. And given what had happened in the First World War, or was about to happen in the First World War, ultimately by 1920, Germany was no longer a factor, though they quickly rebuilt, and by, of course, 1939, 1940, Germany was once again a factor, but so was Japan. But in 1904, Japan was a force to be dealt with. And the because of what a large nation Russia currently is and was then, it was almost impossible to bring the what was left of the Russian Imperial Fleet to the far side of the world, 18,000 miles, by the way, from quote unquote what was known as quote unquote St. Petersburg to Port Arthur, over 18,000 miles. And ultimately, a large fleet, not really seaworthy, as a veteran naval person would say, set off to bring relief to the besieged Fort Arthur in the Sea of Japan. That fleet was defeated, if you will. And what it allowed to have happen is that for the first time in modern history, as it was at that particular point, that, quote-unquote, the Europeans, of which, of course, the Russians were part of the European conglomerate, if you will, you know, having royal blood, houses of the royal dynasties and et cetera, marrying into each other and et cetera. But the Russians had a dream of having what they called a warm weather port, if you will, because technically none of Russia's quote-unquote ports of entry. And it's interesting because for the size, the enormous size of Russia, Russia's most significant area, quote-unquote, of access to the sea, of course, is to the north, which is all frozen, adjacent to the Arctic, if you will. And so for hundreds of years, czars had dreamed about being able to have the open seas and et cetera. They just couldn't find a way to conquer enough nations to the south. The British were in what was being called India and later Pakistan and Afghanistan. And then there was the problem with that the Caucasian did not fight well in the quote-unquote heat of the jungles and et cetera, and that had been shown with regards to both Africa, the South American experience, and even obviously parts of the so-called Far East. But the Russians never lost the dream. But they had to blame someone. Now we get into the whole thing of the Middle East and the suffering. And so after the terrible defeat of the Russian Imperial Fleet off of the shores of actually that area of sea in between Korea and Japan, Russian Imperial staff, military staff, began to look for scapegoats. And the scapegoats that they determined, it's kind of like the race question in America, except in the case of Russia, it was more based on religion. But we now refer you, who are following this broadcast and saying, what is this Negro talking about? This man is talking about white folks, it's history, and et cetera. You know, we don't allow that. Well, we do. We're talking about the revolution of 1905 and Russian Jews. A number of excellent books written by white writers that explain and go into depth. Because what happened was Russia, at the time of the revolution of 1905, were the largest ethnic group, quote-unquote, outside of ethnic Russians to reside in Mother Russia, if you will. And they had always been kind of the scourge, but they were bright, if you will. They were artists, they were great scholars, if you will. I guess they were decent military personnel. They certainly were smart enough to be an integral part of the officers' corps. That's a key piece, by the way, the officers' corps, the men who, quote-unquote, lead the massive armies into battle and et cetera. In fact, one of the reasons that there was great anger with the defeat in 1904 of the Russian Imperial Fleet in the straits between Korea and Japan was that they maintained that there were Jewish naval officers who had betrayed the Tsar. They had betrayed the imperial government. They had betrayed the imperial house. So when the revolution of 1905 took place, it was somewhat surprising to the Jewish politicians and etc. that they had paid no attention, that they were it, if you will. They thought that they were going to be involved in changing the course of control and dynasties and et cetera in Russia, though they were still very loyal to the Tsar, if you will. Some said the Tsar and the line of Tsars, which was great going back over 1,000 years, had significant Jewish blood and et cetera. If you really wanted to get a quote-unquote confrontation with a pure Russian in Mother Russia and during that period of time was to suggest that the Tsar had Jewish blood in his veins, though ultimately when the Tsar and his family were murdered and, quote-unquote, the imperial order collapsed in the final days of the conflict of 1918, that was one of the leverages that was used by the new group called communism, though the first actual revolutionary group were a more imperial group of Russians who decided there needed to be reform, if you will. But they decided that the imperial government needed to stay. Well, the communists pushed what is called the white Russians aside. And by the time that Lenin and others got through, the royal house of the imperial government was gone. But the book, The Revolution of 1905 and Russian Jews, articulates well with the beginning of the end for Jews in Russia and then later in Eastern Europe, if you will. And then later, when a man who was also well-read in understanding what needed to be done to bring his nation back to power, a man by the name of Adolf Hitler, who came out of a beer parlor in Munich, if you will, understood the disdain for Jews in Germany and Austria, if you will, and parts of Poland and even some of the Western European countries. And Adolf Hitler certainly used that to create, quote-unquote, National Socialism, the Nazis, if you will, which then led us into the Second World War. But before we got there, there was another mistake that was made, and Donald Trump so reminds me, and those that surround him so remind me of this. Paris, 1919, just a half a step. The so-called great powers, as they called themselves, there was actually only three of them in their own minds, and that was Woodrow Wilson, one of the great segregationists of all times. Woodrow Wilson, president of the United States, quote-unquote, a white educator from Virginia, a man who brought, quote-unquote, segregation into the hearts and souls of white Americans and to the, quote-unquote, terror that was rendered down upon the Negro race. But in Paris in 1919, these great white leaders gathered to determine how the rest of the world would be cut up, particularly the Middle East, what was left of Black Africa, if you will. The situation had basically been decided in South America because of integration. It was very interesting how that happened, and for those of you that are experts on quote-unquote the growth and the integration of South America, you know what we're saying. Asia was a different situation as we are going into the last 15 minutes of tonight's program. We hope that you're recording, because we want you to go to your own files, your own archives, your own libraries and bookshelves. So in 1919, the big three white men arrived, and the purpose would be to determine, quote-unquote, the final order of things. That's when that word became very, very popular. There would be the right things done for the Europeans, the Austrians, the Austrian-Hungarians, if you will. Even the Italians, if you will, at one time had been a great, quote-unquote, people, nation, when they were Rome, if you will. A little less was thought about the Greeks, who were having their own problems with the emergence of a very powerful brown-skinned man by the name of Ataturk, who later became the father of modern-day Turkey. The Ottoman Empire had collapsed, and etc. And so as they gathered in Paris in 1919, and again, there are a number of publications, but we will refer you to an excellent publication by a white woman, well-educated, a graduate of Oxford, if you will, provost at college in Toronto, and et cetera. Her name, Margaret Macmillan, if you will. If you can find Paris, that's the title of the book, author Margaret Macmillan. Some of you need to take it, read it, study it, and reflect upon what you see happening here in the United States, because here's where the misstep took place. These three white men and others, quote-unquote, of their persuasion, realized that they would have to include the Japanese, who had, by the way, fought on the side of the Allies in the so-called Great War, World War I, because they had realized, and it's one of the reasons we incorporated it into our reflection and remarks early on, that the Japanese in 1919 had the third largest and most powerful navy on the face of the earth. United States, Great Britain, Japan, if you will. Yes, yes. The French did not have that naval flotilla. The Germany, the Imperial German House, had collapsed, if you will. There was no longer a Kaiser, if you will. Of course, that was probably the worst thing that they could have ever done. Hindenburg was going to be president and chancellor and a separate, of course, by 1932. Basically, 13 years later, this had all collapsed. And so, anyways, these three Caucasians, these three white leaders of France and Great Britain, and, of course, the United States of America, understanding Woodrow Wilson had no respect whatsoever for people of color, decided that they would have to invite the Japanese to join them at what would be the Big Four, if you will. Well, the Japanese were much more enlightened than these Caucasians thought that they were. They understood better than anyone could imagine, particularly having in 1904 defeated the quote-unquote powerful white Christian nation of Russia, if you will, showing the superiority of the Japanese militarily, both on land and in the sea. Air power was to come later, I think that you all know. And so in the course of doing what they did, one of the issues, of course, that became extremely important was oil. And so that meant how to cut up the Middle East, if you will, how to deal with, quote-unquote, the little black, brown-skinned Bedouins, if you will, Arabs, and et cetera, and et cetera. They had another name for them. They were called SAN, N-I-G's, if you will. We would suggest, for those of you that are interested, the book by Margaret Macmillan, a very excellent educator, and et cetera. We would ask that and suggest you turn in the great book to page 410. It has chapter 28. It deals with Palestine, if you will. and it deals with the final determination to, in fact, marginalize even more the Palestinian people, the quote-unquote original people of God, if you will. Now, what happened was is that it was one of the reasons that for those of you that are really historians, if you will, and want to walk in the right footsteps, we would suggest that you go back and take a look at writings and reflections in the late 1920s through the 30s before the United States, with all of its arrogance, realized that not only was Nazi Germany a significant threat militarily and politically, but that the Japanese, who had just been allies 20 years earlier with the United States and Great Britain and France and et cetera, had decided that they were not going to, quote unquote, be made to disappear or to, in fact, and think about this, stand down from the development of the necessary powers economically, militarily, and spiritually. Because you have to understand, just before the beginning of hostilities, in 1939, 40, and 41, as the Japanese began to make their moves in places like what is then called Burma and Thailand, Indonesia, and et cetera, that the Japanese were ultimately being blocked and suffocated by the United States and the white Christian powers of Europe from expansion, if you will. The Japanese maintained that they had the right of expansion, that the white Christian world, and particularly the Europeans and the United States, had been doing, quote-unquote, whatever it is they had wanted to do for the last 150 years. Now, these are conversations that are taking place in 1936, 37, 38, and 39, leading up to Pearl Harbor and et cetera. At some point in time, as we move into the last 6 or 7 minutes of tonight's program, the continued Jewish question began to continue to merge because Jews were being forced out of Europe. In fact, it was the Russians more than anybody that were saying it was time for the Jews to go. In fact, it's one of the reasons that Vladimir Putin is so well versed, quote unquote, on how to deal with the Jewish issue in the Middle East. And for those of you that have had access to any of his writings and memoirs, I suggest you do it. A number of good books have been printed and distributed over the last 20 years. Palestine and Israel, if you will, A Challenge to Justice, if you will, by John Ogilvie. Heck of a book. It's rather interesting who Mr. Ogilvie really was. I'll leave it to you to find out. I already know, if you will. I've had access to, quote-unquote, necessary data and et cetera. It's a good book. It talks in terms of the betrayal of the Palestinian people after the United Nations resolution of 1948, creating allegedly a, quote-unquote, a two-state solution, as they always talk about. We said to you at the top of the program how that was dealt with by the, quote-unquote, United States, Britain, France, who also had to play a interesting role, though they were a defeated power, luckily to be back on their feet. Of course, that's what the Marshall Plan was really all about. The final book, which talks in terms of what Donald Trump has done today, and one of the reasons why there is such bitterness in that part of the world, particularly when you talk about the Yom Kippur War, if you will. But I take you back and suggest for those of you that are really interested and you really want to have some understanding of the conflict that is coming, the violence that is coming, yes, there will be days of rage, if you will, and it will last longer than 3 days, I can tell you that. But it was an event on October 6, 1973, when Arab armies launched a surprise attack that nearly destroyed Israel. In fact, for the Israelis, it was a great timing because it helped the Israelis convince the United States of America to accelerate the nuclear program that the Jews had been quietly working with and feeding information to Israel in direct treason against the United States of America their home, if you will, the place where they worked and et cetera. But other than the conviction of the man known as Pollard, we are not supposed in this country to talk in terms of the quote-unquote Jewish and Israeli infringement, if you will, on quote-unquote the constitutional guarantees and the right of quote-unquote safety for the United States of America. And so the Israelis were able to become a nuclear power sitting there on top of around all that oil. It's one of the reasons that the Saudis, if you will, are always compliant, if you will, scraping and bowing, quote-unquote, like an old Negro on the days of the plantation. But in closing, Donald Trump has opened, as a number of Palestinian activists and officials said in the last 7 hours, Hamas particularly said that that the Trump administration, if you will, have opened the gate, and that what will be forthcoming will be something that will continue to play out over the next 10 or 15 years or longer. The moving, quote-unquote, of the American embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem and the commitment to a policy, and some of the Palestinians have articulated it very well. In fact, as we are talking here, we're listening to shortwave communications on the shortwave radio sets. The Palestinians and some of the more radical Muslims slash Arabs have picked up on the fact that apartheid, you see, we in the black world of Africa and America know what apartheid is all about. It is just a different version and a different language for segregation, if you will. The Palestinians have lost the opportunity for their own sovereign state. They will continue to be pushed further and further into the wilderness of the Sinai, and if the Israelis and the United States and Donald Trump can push them and their children and their babies into the Mediterranean to drowned and to die, if you will, that is what will be done. In the meanwhile, they will play the game to make the world. But the world is not fooled, and the world is not a fool, if you will, that there is no interest whatsoever for bringing about resolution, if you will. You know, Donald Trump has been sending his son-in-law, who looks lost. He reminds me of a deer in the headlights of a big red truck coming down the road just before he's crushed under the wheels of the truck. But he shall not be, nor shall Donald Trump be, quote-unquote, the savior, quote-unquote, of the little arrogant, but on the other hand, despised brown people, if you will. The time is up, unfortunately, my friends, for what has happened. Donald Trump has taken a calculated step in the tradition of a man who really, for those of you that like to read your Bible, read those portions of the good book. And if you call in next week, if my associate, Mr. Allen, is back, we will have the quote-unquote ecumenical documentation. But many of you already are scholars and know what we are talking about. God bless the Palestinian people. God bless all of the world, if you will. The maniac has pushed the envelope and now has his finger on the red button. That individual, President of the United States of America. God bless you, America. God bless you, America, and prepare, quote unquote, to do battle under the worst of circumstances. Stay strong, Black America. You will need all of your strength. I'm Ron Edwards. This is the Don and Ron Program. Good night.